You're at the Coaching Inn, 3D Coaching's virtual pub, where we enjoy conversations with people who are engaged in the world of coaching.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coaching Inn. Today I'm in conversation with Anne Hathaway, and this is a much waited for episode. I can't tell you how many listeners have contacted us and said, I think you should talk to someone from Time to Think. So Anne Hathaway, welcome.
Well, thank you. And oh dear, the responsibility.
Yeah, it's only a conversation though, right? So before we talk about that, we'd love to know about you and a little bit about your journey to this point.
Oh gosh. Well, I'll try and give you the sort of 2-minute version rather than the full half hour number.
I thought you were going to say the full lifetime version.
Well, yes. Early background, post a degree in modern languages in the recruitment industry, ending up as a manager of a number of branches. From there, went and did an MBA at INSEAD. Ended up in a senior HR role in a major industrial blue chip company. Was made redundant from the subsidiary of which I was the HR director, and went off to Brussels for a short while to do a secondment to the European Foundation for Management Development. While I was there, I went skiing over a new year, fell down a mountain, broke my back. The fallout from that was that I got made redundant. In the course of my recovery, about a year in, an old boss of mine from my first post-university job called me up and said, I've just met this amazing woman. I've read her book and I really want to train with her. But I need a partner to do it with. Would you come and do it with me?
Wow.
I had never heard of this person called Nancy Klein, and I certainly hadn't read her book, but I trusted Val. So I went along, and that was how I met Nancy. And that was extraordinarily enough back in March of 1993. So this year it's 31 years since I met Nancy. And in common with quite a lot of people, I found myself thinking how much her teaching resonated with me, and that actually I'd been pretty much doing an awful lot of listening to people in that way for a long time. And having done the training, and sort of as I started to recover, I found myself being called up and asked if I would do a particular project, and magically the answer to the project usually turned out to be something to do with introducing people to the thinking environment. So I found myself working with a mixed French and English group who were at odds with each other, and I basically just got them to listen and they went, oh, hang on, we're all on the same side. And things just sort of snowballed from there. So I found myself being asked to coach people, and increasingly to work with them in a thinking environment. And fast forward a number of years to 2009. And Nancy asked me if I would take over from her the supervision and assessment of people who wanted to qualify as Time to Think coaches and facilitators and consultants, which I did for 11 years, and which was one of the most satisfying periods of my professional life, and led to increasingly people asking me to carry on supervising them after their qualification. Which then led to the creation of the the time to think supervision qualification.
Oh. I think you've just answered a question you didn't know I was asking.
Oh, okay, right. Supervision course. Well, it's a course rather than a qualification, I would say.
Yeah.
So broadly speaking, my work involves coaching individuals, supervising individual and groups of coaches, and teaching time to think courses. And I seem to be, after a period of being very involved with family issues, seem to be sort of finding myself doing sort of culture change work with organizations to sort of introduce them to the thinking environment. So, sorry, that turned into a very long
No,
explanation of who I am.
that's such an
Probably getting
interesting
old, you see.
story. And I love the fact that you bumped into it by accident. That's such a beautiful story, Anne. So for listeners who don't know what we're talking about, what is the thinking environment?
So, again, I shall try to give you the short version. So, quite a number of years ago now, Nancy Klein found herself thinking about the question of how you create the conditions for people to think at their best, starting from the premise that the action that we take is only as good as the thinking that's gone behind it. So if that's the case, you know, then how do you make the thinking the best it can possibly be? And essentially by a process of observation, which is ongoing and continues to this day, she observed that it seemed to be all about the way that people were treated while they were thinking. That fundamentally our behavior and our attitude towards another person will have a significant impact on the quality of their thinking. And this got distilled down into what we call the 10 components of a thinking environment, which you could summarize essentially as treating people with the deepest possible respect. There's no sort of hierarchy of those 10 components. They mostly are ways of being or behaving. But if there's one that's possibly more important than any others, and that the others all feed into, it's the quality of our listening. And we refer to this as listening to ignite.
Yes.
So most of the time when people are listening to us, they are listening in order to reply.
Absolutely, says she, replying.
Well, see, one of the problems with being a thinking environment practitioner is you'll find yourself in any conversation thinking, oh, is it okay for me to say something? Is it okay for me to interrupt? So I think, you know, there has to be an agreement that, you know, either we're in a thinking session, in which case it is not okay to interrupt, or we're in a conversation. So we're in a
Absolutely.
conversation. It's fine.
Thank you, Anne. I'm really interested in what you said about the highest possible respect, because it feels really different from that phrase, unconditional positive regard. I'm just wondering what that's about for me. And I wonder what you think.
Well, I'd love to know what more you think about that.
Our listeners are going to laugh in the way that we have this dialogue. So I've just written a book called with Lucia Baldelli called The Human Behind the Coach. And one of the things that we talk about in there is unconditional positive regard, which feels really out. And if I'm really direct, it feels a bit arrogant. I can have unconditional positive regard for you. I can't. I can have the most unconditional, most positive regard I can possibly have. But that's not the same as unconditional positive regard. And when you, what was your line again? The highest?
The deepest possible respect, I think I said.
And for me, I think, as you said that, I just breathed a huge sigh of relief. Because that was the deepest possible respect, which is I'm going to do my very best here. And it's not going to be absolutely perfect. Whereas unconditional positive regard just feels as though it's an aspirational thing, that when we start actually honestly thinking that's what we're doing, I have a little bit of a concern about that because nobody's perfect. And what a marvellous thing that is. Yeah, so I'll now have to go and write in my copy of the book, your description, because that's a beautiful way to describe that, I think.
Thank you. I mean, I think you're right about that the idea of unconditional positive regard is an aspiration.
Yeah.
I also think that the problem with phrases like that we as coaches have lived with for typically for, you know, some time, is that at some level they start to lose meaning.
Yes, and or we start to believe them.
Yes, and the belief that we're there.
Yeah.
Whereas one of the things about when we teach the thinking environment, one of the things we talk about is the three streams of attention. And it's so the idea is it actually you've always, when you're listening to somebody, you've always got your attention, 100% of your attention in three different places, which of course is mathematically impossible. But, you know, the idea is that you're sort of trying to focus in three different places. And so one of them is the creation of the thinking environment. And now I'm going to have a sudden panic and think, oh God, I can't remember the three streams of attention.
That's okay.
But one of them is absolutely our reaction to what we're hearing.
Yeah.
And we can't get away from that, you know. But the point is not to allow it to overtake.
Absolutely.
So the other one is this: is you're listening to the content of what you're hearing. But the other piece is absolutely about your reaction to it, and you can't stop happening. You know, I remember. People typically, you know, as a, you know, particularly when they were sort of doing their coach practicum, and so they would come back to me for a supervision session and sort of report in on the pro bono sessions that they've been doing. And I remember people sort of saying, you know, on one particular occasion that somebody had been sort of, you know, terribly upset by what she'd been hearing from her coachee, and really wanted to cry and was really sort of, you know, struggling with that because, you know, I shouldn't be responding like that as a coach. And I reminded her that one of the things that Nancy said to me back in the day was that it was absolutely okay to cry in a coaching session if you were moved by what you were hearing. But the key thing was not to cry more than the client.
Yes. And also probably not to sob.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, it's funny because I was doing a session this week and I could feel the tear emerging. And because of the subject, I had said, this might happen, and it's really okay with me. As you know, is it okay with you? We'd have that conversation at the beginning. But the really interesting thing is that tear kept coming all day. And that's okay, right? Because we're human.
Yeah, we're human. That's the point, that we are human. And I do think that so it's certainly one of the things that coaching clients have said to me, that they, one of the things that they liked was that I met their humanity. That it's not, you know, I'm somehow setting myself up on a pedestal here. It's that, you know, we're kind of in this together and we're both human. I'm rambling, sorry.
No, you're not. I'm sitting here processing, because what you've just described is absolutely beautiful partnership. And sometimes when people are experiencing a conversation between two people, and one person doesn't say anything, it's experienced as a real differential of power.
Yeah. Yes.
So you might not be able to answer this, but the question that I'm asking myself is, what is it in the way that you are that makes you get that kind of feedback? Because there must be something.
It's something that I ask myself a lot, because the answer is I don't know. People frequently say that they feel safe with me. And I have absolutely no idea what it is I'm doing or not doing or being or not being that creates that impact.
Yeah. So is that about you, or is that about the process? I wonder.
I think it's probably a bit of both. I do. One of the things about coaching in a thinking environment is that because it's quite unusual as an approach, in that, you know, typically you would be not interrupting somebody unless you're asked for your input, or unless, you know, something happens and you think, I need to say something here. And people think that you're not allowed to interrupt at all when you coach in a thinking, but it's not the case, you know.
Okay. That's good to know.
If you hear somebody saying something and you absolutely know that they've got their facts wrong and that's having an impact on their thinking, and you happen to have the facts, you'd be, what's the word I'm looking for? It would be wrong not to interrupt. Yeah. Can I just interrupt you for a second? You know, let me tell you, I happen to know this. And equally, you know, all the same sort of features of, you know, if we hear something that makes us think that the person is at risk, or somebody around them is at risk, or if they're about to do something illegal, you know, all of those sort of normal things, they still apply in a time to think coaching session. So you would interrupt. And now I've lost my train of thought. Where do we start this?
We started on the power equal, power over, power different.
Yes. Yeah, but putting all of that to one side for a moment, because it's usually experienced as a different approach to coaching and somewhat unexpected, you always, as a time to think coach, have to explain to somebody, just to your coachee, how this is going to work. Which may not always be the case in other coaching modalities. So you've kind of already set it up that, you know, this is going to be the shape of it. And, you know, I may be the expert in this way of doing this coaching session, but I'm certainly not the expert in your life and your work. So because one of the components of the thinking, the 10 components that I referred to earlier about, one of the components is equality. That we actually aim as far as we can to create, to work with an attitude of we are equals in this, we are partners in this process. So you endeavor partly from the principles of the thinking environment, partly because that's how you sort of set it up with your client, to, as far as possible to mitigate that sort of power imbalance, which, and having said all of that, you know, there are always moments of temptation.
Course, because you're human.
You're human, you know, so you sit in the coaching and somebody's thinking away, and you know, I can sit there going, actually, I know something about this. I could actually say something here.
I could add value here,
I could add.
the most
Yes.
dangerous internal narrative in coaching.
Exactly. Yes. And then, of course, when you don't say anything, you then discover, listening to the person, that actually they move in a completely different direction than
Absolutely.
you would have taken them. And they have solutions that you'd never have thought of. So.
Completely. So for the listeners, the big difference between time to think and the work that we do around simplifying coaching is that we co-create a container. So we work out what the work is going to be before we do the work. But then once we do the work, we do the least that we need to do in service of them getting heard and having new insights. So the middle bit often will look quite similar. Although we would probably say less than what else do you want to think or feel or want. So we might just go up. But and often the feedback we get is, you know, the container's a bit directive. But actually working out what we're doing today might be working out that we don't know what we're doing. And that we want to do the thinking environment kind of style stuff. It could be, but it's about co-creating that and not assuming that when they come, we know what they want to do. But I want to share with you some feedback, Anne, that I've received from a few coaches over time, and I'm really interested in your response to it. So most of the coaches that I encounter in my journey absolutely love time to think, and a few really don't. But the thing that has made me curious is that I now say, what is it that makes you not like it? Because it's best not to assume, right? So what's been really interesting is that the people who've expressed quite how much they hate it are people who've experienced it as a thinking partner. So I would have assumed it was people who didn't want to stop talking. But it's people who've experienced as a thinking partner and who've absolutely loved it until the facilitator, well, the coach, I don't know what you call them, but says, what else do you think of? I might get the words wrong, but what else do you think or feel or want to say? And the person kind of goes, that's enough. And then they ask it again. What else do you think or feel or want to say? And that's the moment where it's only a small handful, but what's really interesting is that they all describe exactly the same experience, that suddenly they feel that it's power under, that they have less power than the other person, because the other person sounds as though they know that they've got something that hasn't come out yet. And it makes me sad. And I'm just curious about your response, because I know that some of our listeners have experienced that.
Well, that makes me sad too, Claire, actually, because that's the thinking partner not listening to the thinker when they say, actually, that's enough, thank you very much.
So that's a serving the process. This is what the rules say, rather than serving the what you see or hear or sense.
A bit, yes. And I suspect that sometimes if you're watching and listening to somebody thinking, you have you, I might have a sense that maybe there's a bit more, and they but I would always say, if I was going to, if they'd said, thanks, that's enough, I would always say, can I just check with you? What more do you think or feel or want to say? So I would ask permission to ask them.
That's isn't permission important?
It's the permission that's important. Whereas I think if you just go in with, well, what more do you think or feel or want to say? It does give the impression of you haven't listened to me. I've just said that's enough. So, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to anybody who's experienced that. And it's not. That's lack of skill. I don't think it's ill will. I think it's.
No, and I think as we're having this conversation, I think it's made me recognize again that if the only coaching we get is from other people in training environments,
Yeah.
then we're all on a learning journey. And in a training environment, we're on a particular kind of learning journey.
Yeah.
And coach's capacity to create amazing space is amazing, except when it when it's suddenly shut off, which is, I think, as we're talking about that now, is I is might be what's being described there. In the same way that when the coach is creating this beautiful space and then goes, we've got to finish now, and the person goes, okay, that was a bit of a shock. Oh, thank you for that. It's a really useful thing. But it, I think it's also an observation that when we want really high quality engagement, sometimes having it from another student, if you're training or if you're doing CPD or anything, is a great thing. But actually, sometimes we need to go somewhere where there's a deeper embodied wisdom in the practitioner.
It's back to the sort of, what we were talking about at the beginning of the conversation about being human, that sort of, that forgiving one practitioner for making a mistake might be needed.
Yeah, and we all make mistakes, don't we?
And we all have bad days.
Yeah, exactly.
I did a chemistry session with a prospective coaching client a couple of weeks ago, and I came away and went,
Dear. I said that to someone the other day because we all aspire, don't we, to do our best work. But if we're going to do our best work, we're also going to do our worst work.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. I realized at that moment that your listeners won't know that I had my head in my hands.
I think we could hear it, Anne. So I know that there are some listeners going, tell us more about the supervision training. So please, Anne, tell us about the supervision training.
So what can I say? The I suppose the it came out of a number of things. Various times, I think colleagues doing trainings at with CSA and other schools, and also me having gone. Actually, I don't want to do this. I don't that I sort of invented the process that I use for supervising people doing their practicums. Because Nancy always used to basically sort of get them to send in recordings and essays and so on, and all in one great lump. And then look at it all and then write them the most beautiful letter in the way that Nancy does.
Wow.
Very carefully sort of explaining the things that they might look at, and you know, and then also commenting on the things that they were doing terribly well. And when she asked me to take on the, sorry, I've just realised I'm making this about me and it shouldn't be about me. Anyway, just briefly, when she asked me to take over the supervision and assessment from her, I said to her, look, you know, I'd be very happy to do it, but I can't do it in the way that you do it. Because, not least because I can't. My expertise with words is not remotely of the same level. And also, I think that, you know, if you wait till the end, you know, you haven't covered people's questions in the middle, and they may have embedded some habits that you could have caught earlier. So basically, I agreed with her that I would do a sort of session series of face to face, voice to voice, video to video sessions. And my so fundamentally, and the so the supervision process came out of that, and input from other colleagues who've done, as I say, formal trainings. And the fundamental premise behind the time to think approach to supervision, and we really don't like the word supervision because it implies a power imbalance. But it's the word that's out there and nobody else recognizes what you would be doing.
I don't like the word coaching, though.
Well, yeah. What can we say? So the basis of it is that fundamentally the conversation would start with what's going well in your practice and move on to what are you finding challenging or have questions about. And most of the time, given uninterrupted and keenly interested time, it turns out a coach will know what's not going well and what they would do differently the next time and what they've learned from that without you having to tell them. And just ever so occasionally, so then there's a third phase, which is me or the supervisor going, have you got any questions for me? Which, you know, again, another conversation. And then the fourth phase might be if it hasn't already come up, and 9 times of 10 it usually has, I've got some observations that I'd like to share with you. And during all of that, and particularly in the phase where the coach is thinking about, I say coach, you know, it could be facilitator or Anybody who's working with people, essentially, who needs somewhere to go and think through the stuff that happens when we work with people. So most of the time, so in the course of them thinking about, there may be some limiting assumptions that come up, and so then there's a piece of work to sort of examine those assumptions, whether they're true, and replace them with a true and liberating alternative. So the supervision training is essentially a sort of further stage after. So in order to do it effectively, you would need to have gone through the coaching qualification and develop some expertise in the thinking partnership in order to do that. Sorry, that's turned into a very long and feels like
no,
slightly...
but that's a useful answer. So what I think there's something there about the development journey is about becoming very competent and fluent in being able to create a thinking environment, because in your supervision training, you're creating a thinking environment in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
But I think I also heard that you won't necessarily be supervising thinking environment people. You could be supervising anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it would need to be, and I have, but I guess the agreement would always need to be, it would need to be somebody who was happy to be supervised in that way.
Absolutely.
And because for me, the whole point is to develop one's own reflective practice. So that actually when you come out of a coaching call or in-person session, and you think, I'm not sure I'm happy with that, you can actually say to yourself, okay, so what am I assuming here about how I was or how I behaved or something? Yeah. So you're carrying around that sort of reflective practice. So
that is so useful, because we get this week, it's Wednesday, isn't it? And this week I've already had three people ask me if I run supervision training. And I don't, and I'm not going to. And then they say, where do you recommend? And I say, well, one of the interesting things about supervision training is that often there's a complexity in it. And you've just described a supervision training that has a depth but not a complexity, I think.
Oh, what a lovely way to put it. I mean, fundamentally, it is actually the whole creating a thinking environment is actually a very simple process.
Well, so is coaching.
But that's not to say that it's easy.
Exactly, which is how you and I have developed our careers. Because simple isn't easy at all, but it's also very beautiful and very effective.
Yeah.
So I'll put a link in the show notes, listeners, so that you can have a look at that if you're going, where can I go? And think about that. Anne, what an absolute delight to have a conversation with you today.
Well, likewise, thank you so much. I mean, I had no idea. I have to say I was quite anxious because I had no idea about this conversation. you make it very easy to talk to you and talk sensibly to you. Well, I hope sensibly to you.
Thank you. It's about co-creation, isn't it? Which is exactly the same as other work.
Yes.
So if people want to talk to you, how do they get in touch with you, Anne?
My website has a contact page. So it's basically just my name. It's www.annehathaway.co.uk.
I'll put that in the show notes. And they can contact you that way.
Yeah, that's probably the easiest way to contact me, unless you want to or my email is basically anne@annehathaway.co.uk.
Marvellous. Well, thank you for coming. Everybody, thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of your week. Bye-bye.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, we'd love you to share the podcast with a friend or leave a comment on social media. And if you'd like to become a regular at the Coaching Inn, you can subscribe on Podbean and all major podcast channels. We look forward to welcoming you next time. You've been listening to The Coaching Inn, 3D Coaching's virtual pub. For more information, check out 3dcoaching.com.